about 350 yards up. He's going to hit about a 500. I expect, don't you think?
That's a beast, man. Oh, golly, I'm hot today.
Let's go while we're young.
A looper?
A looper. You know, the caddy, looper.
Hey, welcome back to the Chasing Daylight, everybody. We got a special interview series today. One of the gentlemen here in town, he's local. He is a mental, what would you say? What would you say your technical term is?
Mental performance coach.
Mental performance coach, Mark Chaney.
Chaney.
Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So you reached out and it caught my attention. I know the golf game is an incredibly mental game. I work tirelessly with a swing coach that's a good friend of mine, and he's been telling me for a long time, your mental game is trash. We have to fix that. Joe has been playing the game 2 years now, steadily.
Three years now.
He's down to two handicap. Jeremy, our other co-host, has been playing golf for a long time. He's a plus two right now. Myself, I'm down to an eight, and the mental game is getting better. But what would you say is your beginning process to getting a golfer to understand how important the mental side of the game is?
Well, I'd say first is, like, why are you playing golf? Like, let's identify that. I'll give you an example. So I had a former boss who got exceptionally frustrated every time we played golf on the course. And he had an expectation that he was supposed to hit the guy like a tour player, hit the ball like a tour player. And he didn't have the athleticism to do that. He didn't have the technical expertise to do that. He didn't have the practice time to do that, but that was his expectation. And like half the time we played, he'd end up walking off the course. So why are you out there? Like, are you out there for fun? Is it just time with the buds? Is it because you enjoy the process of getting better? Do you want to compete? Do you have aspirations of playing in local or regional competition? Like, I think everyone has to have a good understanding of why am I out there in the first place? That's going to change your approach to the game. It's going to change some of your expectations. And that's where I'd always want to start is, you know, what's the reason you're on the course? So I guess I'd ask the three of you, like, why do you play golf?
Oh, Joe, go ahead.
I started 3 years ago. I got, you know who Eric Anders Lang is?
I do not.
So he's a YouTuber. He has kind of like a philosophy where it's like, you know, enjoy the bad shots, you know, and just kind of enjoy playing the game. And that's kind of how I approach it. You know, like I was telling Matt yesterday when we played, I said, you know, on Wednesday, I'm going to be in the office and I'm going to be wishing I was playing golf. So you got to enjoy it while you're out here. But I don't know. It's the challenge. It's the camaraderie. It's accomplishing something that a lot of people can't, you know, don't get to. And just the creativity of it, I like, because I like to shape my shots and, you know, pulling off those ones. It's just so rewarding. I mean, it can be frustrating at the same time, but I don't let it get me down. But, you know, I see it as an opportunity to do something great. That's kind of how I've always thought of it.
What about you, Jeremy?
Cool.
Yeah, this is kind of funny because we're all kind of different in this.
Oh, absolutely.
So for me, I don't, and I've kind of said this before, is I don't really play golf to have fun. I don't like to go, I don't like to go golf just to have fun. I like to go to perform and, you know, kind of validate my skills and things like that. But I do have fun along the way, but it's more about me pulling off shots and in things that I've practiced and kind of performing when I need to, when it comes down to a putt on the last hole or playing a match with these guys even for a little bit of money or playing in local tournaments. That's really what I love about golf.
And for me, it's a caveat thing. It's a lot. It's one, it's an escape to get away from the hustle and bustle of everyday life. I love being outdoors. I love seeing different courses and how the architects designed them. I love seeing the challenges that a different hole at a different course can present. And I love the challenge of getting better. I want to be better. I practice, I grind. I beat myself up when I don't play well. I beat myself up when I play well, cause I could have played better. For me, why I play it's one, it's a blast. It's so much fun to get out there with your friends and even strangers that you meet. I've had a long term phrase that I've said, golf brings people together unlike any other sport in the world. And, these guys, we're here because of golf. We do this because of golf. It's brought me some of my closest friends, and it's such a neat sport, and I get off on it. It's weird, but I do.
I also love that there's no end. You can always do better.
Right. You can't beat golf.
Right.
No, it's unbeatable.
And I think the three of you have encapsulated is the beauty of the game. Because all of those are valid reasons, and you can have all of them, or you can have one of them, or it could depend on the day or who you're with, and just having that appreciation for the game, I think, is a great starting point and puts you in a better position to perform. But in terms of struggles that golfers have, I think a lot of it comes down to fear, whether that's a fear of what someone's going to say or think, especially mm-hmm. if it's on the first tee. Where are people most nervous? It's on the first tee or on the 18th green. Both cases, you have a few people around. What are they going to say when they see me tee off? What are they going to say when I finish? And so there's certainly that fear of what might happen, of where my ball is going to go. And so that leads to compensation. So I think fear is a big driver of it. And then the expectation piece is another one that I think frustrates a lot of golfers, and having an expectation for an outcome that doesn't match with statistical reality.
So that's one of the things that Steven, who's my friend that is working with me, he told me a while ago, I have to get rid of expectations. You can't have expectations when you go on the golf course. Is that something that you kind of believe in, or not that extreme?
I would say you have to adjust your expectations. So let me give you an example. So you go to the driving range, you're warming up pre-round, you're striping it. It's pure. Like, wow, today's going to be a great day. I'm going low today. I can't wait to get on the course. So now you've just elevated an expectation of what you're going to play. You go off, you play the first couple holes, and it's like, I was hitting it so great. What's wrong with me now? And so the expectation that you're going to have a great day led to greater tension. And then when you didn't hit a couple of good shots, that led to greater tension. And now you hit bad shots, and now it just turns into a disappointing day.
You can just dig yourself deep, deep, deep hole.
Yep. But then flip that around. You go, you've got a match with your buddies. You go warm up. You can't keep it on the planet. So then you go to the first tee. It's like, well, this is going to be fun today. And the expectations are so much lower because you think you're going to hit it like crap. And then you have a great day of scoring. And I have golfers tell me that all the time of, yeah, I warm up great and I play poorly. I warm up poorly. I play great. And I think a lot of that has to do with adjusting the expectations. So I think reasonable expectations are the key. I'm going to hit some good shots today. I'm going to hit some bad shots. I'm going to get some good breaks. I'm going to get some bad breaks. And I'm going to face some challenges. I'm going to have to create. I'm going to have to adapt. And if you just expect that parts of this are going to go well today, parts of this aren't going to go well, then it's much more realistic. But with your instructor saying, yeah, eliminate the expectations. I mean, we can certainly get into like proximity to the hole expectations on approach shots and makeable putts versus unmakeable putts. I mean, that most people have very unrealistic expectations about their ability to perform And that just leads to a lot of frustration.
Yeah.
Do you see the golfers that have a strong mental game? Is there a similarity between them? People that don't let things get to them, that just, you know, stone cold faced, get out there and play well, versus the people that are, you know, head cases.
I think there are similarities, but I still think there are differences in personality. I mean, if you look at all the major winners from the last 5 years, they're very different in personality. Tiger's personality is very different than Phil's personality, very different than a Justin Thomas or Brooks Koepka or certainly Bryson's personality. Mm-hmm. So they have differences in their approach and just even how they play the game. That being said, I think there are certain commonalities in people who win consistently on tour. So great book for you guys to check out. It's a little older in print, but it's called The 8 Traits of Champion Golfers. And that's by Deborah Graham and John Stabler. And so Deborah Graham did research, I think it was early 80s, into what makes for a champion golfer. And she did personality assessments and found 8 traits that correlate with people that are winning on the LPGA. So then she did the study on the PGA Tour, did the study on the Champions Tour, found the same results, is that there seems to be a personality profile of people who win more frequently. And so if you can start to match up some of those personality traits, then I think you do have a greater chance of being more successful in those areas.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. That could be helpful for like sports betting.
it could be. So
give me your shrink evaluation, please. I'd like to go over it.
Yeah. So their system's called Golf Psych, and so I trained with them several years ago, and it's a pretty involved personality assessment that you take at first, and then you compare your traits, and it's things like confidence, your dominance, your openness, your response to adversity, challenges, things like that. And then you start to dial in, okay, this is where I match up. And this is where the greater disparity from a professional profile. And so, okay, that's where we need to work on it. So it's pretty cool research. Does take a little time to do that assessment, but I found that it profiled me spot on.
Oh, wow. Okay. So as golfers, there's a universal measurement for how we perform. That's the handicap index, right? Not everybody drives at 300, not everybody, you know, drains it like a maniac, but the handicap index kind of lets everybody know where you are as a player on the golf course. Do you see a big difference with the, you know, we're talking average golfers here, not professional. I don't want to get into like the plus 6-8 guys, but, or the PGA Tour, but the average golfer that is, you know, a low index versus a mid index, where do you see their like mental prowess come through as they get lower? Does it show that they're, you know, much stronger mental player as they get lower, or can you have those guys that are just complete and utter head cases like myself that can go out and actually tune it in a lot?
Now, I think one thing you definitely see as indexes drop is decision making quality, and the lower the index, the fewer big numbers you have, and typically that's or a lot of times I think that's linked to the decisions you make. So the higher index player hits it off target, off the tee, and now has a marginal chance to reach the green by hitting it through a gap in the trees. Low probability given their technical ability, but they still decide, I'm going to go for that 1 in 100 shot. And so that puts them in worse trouble. Then they get it around the green, dump it on the green, and now they're frustrated, and then jam the first putt past the hole and 3-putt, and all of a sudden we're a triple. Versus the higher index or the higher quality player, the lower index player, who says, okay, I'm going to take my medicine, I'm going to punch this out in the fairway, knowing that I could still make par if I get it on the green and make a putt. And the worst thing I'm going to do is make a bogey. So just that in there of that, looking at the options and making sound decisions and trusting their ability to get it up and down, I think makes a huge difference. So that decision-making is certainly part of it. I think a huge difference too is recognizing how I'm going to play when I don't have my A game. I mean, realistically, even if you ask the tour guys, they've got their A game maybe 20% of the time.
Yeah.
They've got their, you know, D game maybe 10% of the time, those weeks when they just can't get it around and miss a cut. But then a lot of times they're playing B, C. So how am I still going to score when I don't have my best stuff? And I think that's a huge difference as the quality of player changes. And so that, I think that takes some mental maturity, some experience certainly, but then that some of the creative nature of it too. I think the third piece of that is one bad shot is not predictive of how the round's going to go. So the better player is not shifting into fixing mode when they hit a bad shot or two bad shots. And that keeps them from getting technical, which keeps them from hitting more bad shots. The worse the player is, the more they try to fix the shot on the course. And so they're trying to fix the last shot rather than play the present shot. And then they hit another bad one. Now they get uptight. Now they're frustrated. They hit another bad shot. Now they're asking their buddies for tips. And and then they're it must be hitting home there. And then they're, oh, I've got to make a birdie to make up for that bogey, or I've got to gamble. And they just lose sight of what they're really trying to do, and they totally get out of the present. They're either dwelling on those past mistakes, or they're worrying about what's going to happen ahead of them, and it just snowballs.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. So when it comes to, I know a lot of people, because I've struggled with this too, right? The score, right? The number. It's every time I had been close to like breaking par, I get, you know, nervous, excited, like I'm gonna do it today. And I finally did it about a month and a half ago. Since that happened, I feel so much more free on the course, knowing that I have the ability to do it and knowing that I can save rounds and, you know, trust, more confidence, I would say, and not so worried about the number. A number is a number, right? It doesn't mean anything. It really doesn't. What do you feel about, you know, your score, the number? How much does that matter, and how much do you see people putting pressure on a number?
Well, I think a good example is when the tour takes a par five and turns it into a par four, and especially at majors. So at Torrey Pines, they take a couple of par fives for the public and make them par fours for the tour players, and all of a sudden, even those guys are like, oh, now I'm making bogey.
Right.
I should be making. It's a four or it's a five. I mean, everyone's playing the same hole. That doesn't really matter.
Right.
But just what we've assigned that as a, what it should be, you know, there's that expectation again of what you should get on that hole. It changes people's perceptions of it. And likewise, I think we do that with score, but you know, I think your experience is what most golfers do when they have that first opportunity to break 100, break 90, break 80, it does have some significance, because what's the first question that everyone asks you when you walk off the course?
What'd you shoot?
Exactly. So that's a big part of it. And 79 versus 80. I mean, how much difference is that between 80 and 81? But
huge.
Huge. It absolutely is. And so that there is that reality, but like you say, now that you've done it, you know, you can do it. And I think that's a key difference. You know, when I was working with the Long Beach State women's team, they, when I started with them, they hadn't won a conference championship. And so we worked together, and there was the belief that they had the ability to win a conference championship. They hadn't done it. And then they went and did it. The next year around, it wasn't just belief. It was knowing.
Right.
We can win a conference championship. And then they went and did it again. So I think those are two different things between the knowing and believing.
Okay. So on a relatively fresh topic, Louis Oosthuizen. Do you watch a lot of golf?
I do.
Okay. So Louis Oosthuizen, Mr. Runner-up in the majors, again, didn't come through on a Sunday in a major. What is your assessment? What do you think is going on with him?
Without knowing Louis, it would be tough for me to speculate what's happening. I mean, certainly in comparison to the, let's say, the top 15 finishers yesterday, I think he was one of the only guys who was above par. So, you know, it's not just an issue of, well, one guy had a hot day. I think a lot of people played well yesterday. A
ton of people.
And he played marginally. Like in an average British Open, a 71 would have been fine, would have got it done, but not when it's golf in a dome. Well, it's not like golf in San Diego like it was yesterday. So, you know, what's the issue? You know, I could speculate, but again, it's without knowing him, it's really hard to say because it can be different things. Typically, what happens for any golfer, and so whether we go back to breaking 80 for the first time, or you're playing in your club championship or state AM or whatever it is, as the consequences of the event or the round increase, and as the scrutiny of the round increases, then there are physiological and mental changes in your body, in your mind. So we call that activation. So activation is a state of physical and mental readiness. And when you enter that environment, then your activation levels rise. And to some extent, that can be a good thing. It can actually help you. So some people's abilities are actually sharpened by that environment. Like if they're just out with their friends, it's not that interesting. They're maybe not as focused, but if something's on the line or we're playing for some money, or this is an opportunity to, you know, win a championship, all of a sudden that increases the focus and they actually play better. But that's only to a certain point. At a tipping point, then your activation level gets too high and now it starts to impact your performance. And it can be a minor impact or it could be a major impact. So minor impact, just that extra little level of activation can increase muscle tension. And so now that iron that you normally would have hit 15 feet, maybe you hit the 20 feet. So now just change that proximity to hold just enough that maybe you don't make a birdie that you could have made previously. Or that fine or quality of impact that's needed for that exacting shot. You know, take Louis' shot on 7 out of the bunker. If I'm just a little bit off, now he airmails the green instead of getting out and on the green. Now he's in another bunker. Now it compounds. He makes bogey when everyone else is making birdie and or eagle on that hole. So that little margin can affect your touch just enough that you start missing shots. And it doesn't look like a collapse. It doesn't look like you really choked. You just don't score the same way that you would normally.
Yeah, I was really surprised considering he's won this event before. I mean, yeah, it was a different course, different time, but I really felt like this was going to be something that it wasn't a new challenge for him. He's been here. I've done that. I've been here before. I know what's happening. And I didn't expect him to, well, I didn't think he was going to come out and shoot a 64, but I didn't think he was going to not perform the same way he did the first 3 days.
I think it was surprising. I think everyone's expect. I mean, he's certainly putting himself in the hunt over and over and it's there. So it's not like he's playing bad golf. And it's not like he pulled a Vandeveld and just imploded on the last hole. So that would, like, Vandeveld would be an example of where the activation just gets too extreme. And we call that in sports psychology, we call that catastrophe theory, where you just completely lose the ability to execute technical swings that you would normally get. And so in that realm, when people get to that point where they're actually choking, now they're starting to think about how do I swing the club and what's the consequence of that. And so then and you get all in your head.
Sports catastrophe. You guys are going to see that more and more. How'd your round go? I had a sports catastrophe.
Now, what would your advice be to someone that struggles with harnessing that moment?
Yeah. It's the first is just being aware of what's happening. Like, let's recognize, okay, my heart is beating faster, or I can feel some butterflies in my stomach. Maybe my hands are a little shaky. Or I'm thinking about what I'm going to get out of them, like holding the trophy, or what am I, even the bragging rights in the clubhouse, or what I could post on social media about beating my buddies. Whatever that thought is, and let's acknowledge that it's there. So a lot of people try to block those thoughts out. You can't block those thoughts out. They're just going to keep coming back. That's what the brain does. It generates thoughts and emotions. So acting like it's not there is not helpful. In fact, it's worse. So let's start with just acknowledge. Okay. Yeah, it's there. I'm aware of it, and let's recognize it. And then you reframe your perspective on that. So rather than saying, oh, I'm so nervous, I don't like this, how about more, this is my body that's telling me this matters. Because if it didn't matter, I wouldn't feel like it.
Yeah.
You know, Kisner went out and played in 2.5 hours yesterday because he was the first on the course. No one was watching. It didn't really matter. He was able to fly around. I guarantee he was not feeling the stress that last couple of groups were playing with. So let's reframe that and say, okay, this is what my body is doing. Because really that feeling, when you get those butterflies, when you get a little shaky in the hands, that's just adrenaline. And a lot of people think, well, there's something wrong with me. No, you're human. So let's recognize it. You're a human being. Adrenaline gets produced in these moments. And so that's going to have a certain feeling. Let's recognize it for what it is. And instead of trying to block it out, let's see if we can use that. Let's interpret it as, hey, this is my body excited to play. This is an opportunity, not a threat. And so changing that relationship with the thoughts, changing the relationship with the moment is a really good starting place. And then we can get into some of the physiological techniques you can use to manage that too. But just your perspective on it is huge.
I think we're screwed. Joe just got like great advice.
Well,
so we need is him to get hyped up now when he's nervous.
Right. But when there's been moments where I've been close, what have I always said?
Oh, you feel it.
I feel excited to do something, not scared.
Yeah.
You know, I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, this actually was what kind of a question I was going to have for you, and you kind of hit it, was the struggle for me was translating around with the buddies to have that same kind of feel when I'm playing in an important tournament, like an amateur championship or something like that. But I think as you talked about not really shying away from it, you know, it's there. You just have to accept that it's there. And, you know, I've always kind of maybe shied away from it a little bit. And so I'm more scared of, you know, I feel that adrenaline, but I'm trying to control it because I think it's a negative thing.
Block it out.
Yeah. That you described me to a T. That was absolutely perfect. So that was super helpful.
Good. Good to hear it. Yeah. What we really call that is whether you look at a situation as a challenge state or a threat state. So if this is a challenge, that's something that's exciting. We enjoy challenges. I think that's why we all play golf. And if every course was an easy simple drive, flip wedge, make the putt, it wouldn't be much fun. So look at it as a challenge versus a threat state. If this is threatening to me, whether it's threatening to my ego or threatening to what other people are going to say about me, now we get into that avoidance mode and we get defensive and we try not to do things instead of trying to do what we want to. And those are, again, two different mental states, but also physiologically, they look different. Like you actually have a difference in your blood flow and how much oxygen is getting around your body. So yeah, that we want to be in the challenge state, definitely not the threat state.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your history with the game and how you got to be in the position you're in now. When did you start playing, or, do you still play now?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. So let's start, give you a little bit of history on you.
I can distinctly remember, I was probably three or four. We lived in Florida. I had a plastic golf club ball and just whack it around the backyard. And even at that age, like I would watch golf on TV at the age of three, four, five. We didn't really have the money growing up for me to really pursue it. So that's always influenced my relationship with the game, because I always look at golf as a privilege. It's it's such a great opportunity to be out there. So growing up, I played basketball. That was a lot more affordable. I get a ball, I got a hoop, I'm good to go. So I'd go out and play when I could, when I had the money, but I didn't have instruction, didn't have any of the resources that a lot of people did. So I go to college, I played basketball in college, and from time to time, go out and play some golf too. And then I joined the golf team my senior year of college, basically to get some free range balls and some free golf out of it, because I knew one of my buddies had done it. Like, well, I'm better than he is, so I'm going to join. So that was, I didn't have my first golf lesson until I was like 22. And wow. then I moved out here and started teaching and coaching at Faith Lutheran High School. And I started the girls golf team. So that was back in 2000. And at the time, the state rules prohibited coaches from coaching their players on the golf course during a competitive round. So what are we going to do for 5 hours? We're going to go play golf. So all those coaches teed off. The kids played behind us. We'd finish our round. We'd sit at the clubhouse. They would come in. We'd collect their scores. And so, I'm playing 27, 36 holes a week on the course, getting lots of practice. So I got a lot better as the longer I coached. And so that really helped my technical side of the game. And then just as wanting to be a better coach, that's when I did the TPI certification. That's when I just started asking lots of questions of golf pros in town and learning from them. And then as my swing got better, as my understanding of the swing got better, then I was able to coach my players better as well. And then just, I think the evolution of it is then it turned towards the mental. So in 2009, my girls team had won the regional tournament and shot a state record. So state record for a low score. We go to the state tournament the next week. So, we shoot the state record at Bears Best. We go over to Boulder Creek and we play our worst round of the year. It was abysmal. And we still had the lead after day one of the state tournament. We have a one stroke lead. So I tell all the girls, okay, we played as bad as we possibly could. Got out of our system. We still have a lead. Tomorrow's going to be a new day. I'll see you tomorrow. We come back the next day and we played worse the second day.
Oh jeez.
And so we end up finishing state runner up, which is not shabby, but it was there for us. And I could see right from the start with a couple of the players that the discomfort they had with the situation, the frustration that was mounting. And I tried everything I knew at the time about coaching and focus and talk them back into let's play this shot and I couldn't change it. Like, I could see it, but I couldn't do anything about it. It's like watching a car wreck in slow motion. And so that really got me going deeper. You know, I'd already read the Rotella books and things like that, but I said, okay, I need to learn more about the mental side of things. And so that's when I started reading about golf psych, did that certification. And then a couple other things pushed me a little further down the line of sports psychology. And so then I said, well, I need to get more education. And that's when I went back to school, got a degree in performance psychology. And then about a year after that, got my credential as a certified mental performance consultant. And then along the way in there too, I had awesome opportunity. I got to spend 2 summers at IMG Academy in Florida, which originally was started as the Bollettieri Tennis Academy, and then Ledbetter had his golf academy there. And so it's tremendous opportunity there too, to learn and work with golfers. And so I just brought all that back to my golf teams, and then the other people that I work with outside off campus.
So do you have some players that are under your tutelage right now?
So I work with, like, not just golfers, but athletes of all sports. So, you know, I'm like, right now I'm working with a swimmer. I'm working with a businessman who just wants to get better at his job, at finding direction there. And then, so my golfers right now would be kids that are on our teams. And then certainly there are some of the players of our graduates that have gone on to play in college that I still keep in touch with and will touch bases with. So yes.
Nice. You got anything?
I don't think so. I'm like really excited to go play though.
I know. I got golf on Friday and Saturday. And I'm angst. I'm ready to go. So how often are you getting out?
Not enough.
Never enough. Okay, so because this is, you know, we are a Vegas podcast. Every year we do episode where we rank our favorite golf course. Well, it's not our favorite. It's a point based system where we rank the best golf courses in Vegas that we've played. So, not going into too many technical things, what would you say is your favorite golf course in Vegas?
Favorite golf course in Vegas. Do I have to pick one?
Yes. Or you can give us a top three.
Okay. So I really enjoy playing the Boulder City Muni.
Oh, Muni guy.
And here's why. I think for one, the greens are always in great shape. And it's not a desert golf course. You know, it reminds me of courses I grew up with. I grew up in the Midwest and the South. So it reminds me of courses from back there. So I really like playing the Muni. It's fun. It's one of the first places when we moved here. I can remember we were young and poor and like we'd go over there and walk 36 because that's what we could afford to do. So I have lots of good memories of playing the Muni. On the flip side, then I think TPC Summerlin's a great track.
Yeah, it is.
Also great conditions, challenging, and it's always great opportunity. I always think of it, it's a privilege when I get to go play there. So
absolutely.
And then a third, it's the dearly departed, but I do miss Silverstone. I'm back in the days. I played a lot of golf at Silverstone as well, but those are very different reasons. So, like, yeah, if we wanted to get into quality golf course, it'd be a different top three.
Yeah, we.
But for me, those would be the three.
Yeah, we do our point system based on price and experience and it's all kinds of. We didn't want it to be because everybody knows Shadow Creek, Southern Highlands. They're going to be one and two on every list. So we kind of broke it down and kind of made it like the average golfer, you know, because not everybody is going to fork out $1,000 to go play Shadow Creek.
Right. Okay. So I'd have to put, I'm going to take Silverstone out and then put Southern back in there. I might even put Southern above Summerlin. I've not played Shadow, so I can't comment on that one, but Southern is,
it's special. It's
pretty pure. Yeah.
Okay. So, do you have a Instagram account or social media that you want to let everybody know how to get in touch with you?
Yep. All my social media is the same. It's at Coach Mark Cheney.
And you're still coaching Faith Lutheran?
I still coach the boys golf team. Yes.
Where do you guys play out of?
Our home course is Canyon Gate.
Oh, nice. Cool. Hey, we got a couple of friends that are members out there.
Yeah. And, you know, they went through a couple of rough years with the quality of greens, but since the rebuild, the greens are phenomenal and the course is in the best shape I've seen it in probably 15 years. So
that's a bold statement. Wow.
It's really a good opportunity for the kids that they get to play there.
Yeah. Do you, I saw that you worked with First Tee. Are you working with any other, you know, SNJ, GA or anything like that?
Yeah, actually I'm doing two presentations for the SNJ GA, this week and next week on, it's for parents helping. It's called Helping Your Golfer Thrive.
Nice.
Awesome. So just helping parents identify some of the things that we talked about today, actually, to help their kids be more successful in the course.
Awesome. Well, hey, Mark, I want to thank you for joining us. I love, you know, the local side of things here, so we're honored to have you on. I know I'm going to be in touch with you about some things for sure, because if anything, my mental game could definitely use some reworking. It's bad. It's bad.
Be ready, Mark.
Let's be nicer to yourself. It can get better. It's not bad.
Okay. Yes. My mental game could be a lot better.
A little more positive stuff going on there.
He's on his way to the Lexus dealership right now. So, so yeah, everybody, thanks. Mark, thank you again for coming on. We really appreciate it. Everybody give him a follow. I'm going to have links to his social media profiles in there, and that book that you mentioned, we'll have that in there as well, the golf psych stuff. So thanks so much for coming on, and we look forward to hearing from you later on down the road.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.